speaking about the windows open. This window was open, that window was open. I've had a cold all week, but thank God this morning it got better. But it just reminded me of, must have been 10, 15 years ago, I was invited to be a guest speaker in Johannesburg, South Africa, for Yom Yerushalayim. And I arrived in South Africa with a sore throat, till I opened up my mouth. So I had to say something. So I started off by saying, that morning, in fact, the news, and it was in the newspapers, that President Bush had said, there's a window of opportunity opening up in the Middle East. As I said, whenever a window of opportunity opens, I get a pashlug and a cold. Alright. Now we can go to the shir. This is a golden oldie that has been so revised, and with such chidushim, I'm flying around for the last 2-3 days. So let's go step by step. There it is. Number one, Parshat Bo, the first communication of God to the Jewish people. God speaks to Moshe, tell the children of Israel, HaChodesh Hazeh Lochem, this month, unto you is Rosh Chodashim, the first of all months, Rishon Hu Lochem L'Chodshei HaShanah, it is the first of the months of the year. Nisan, the month of Nisan. This was said to Moshe Rabbeinu on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. This is the first of months. This is the first communication of God to the Jewish people. It's 2 weeks. In 2 weeks, they're going to march out triumphantly from Mitzrayim. Which, of course, brings immediately to mind the great, eternal, first Rashi in Chumash. Number two is my first Rashi. The years I've said I would like to have students that if you wake them up in the middle of the night and you tell them, please recite for me the first Rashi in Chumash, they should be able to say it without hesitation. Rashi's opening remarks in Torah, Omer, Rabbi Yitzchak said, Lo hoyov tzorich lehatchil et ha-Torah, ela mi-ha-chodesh hazeh lochem. Torah is a book of law. If so, Torah should have begun with this pasuk that appears in this week's Sefer. The first law, the first communication, is ha-chodesh hazeh lochem. Nisan is the first of months. That's where Torah should have begun. Shehi mitzvah Rishona, back to the Rashi, because this is the first commandment, Shehitzchakhu bo Yisrael, that Israel was commanded. Umar tam patach b'bereshit. And what is the reason that it began with the book of Genesis? Who needed? And not a matter who needed. Now, take that back. In other words, the story of creation could have been told someplace later in Torah. But Torah is the book of legislature. The laws should have started with HaChodesh HaZeh Lochem. I said in the past, once in Shul in Haranof, I was giving a shir on the Haggadah, and I told them the Malbin, on the fear kashis. Nanish don't know how my said he called. So I said, what the Malbim says, don't tell your children. The Malbim says Manishtana is not a question. It's not correct to translate why is this night different than all other nights? If it would have been a question, it should have said Lama Halayla Hazeh. Why is this night different than all of our nights? You know what Ma means? Ma is an exclamation. Oy, Ma tovu alecho Yaakov. How wonderful are your tents, O Yaakov. Ma tovu ma noyim shevet achin gam yachad. How wonderful and pleasant it is when brothers live together in peace. So there was an old Jew sitting in shul, and he says, Rebbe, when we were learning Chumash, so the Rebbe in Cheder said, you know, you're supposed to read the Rashi over here. It's not why. Rav Yitzchok is not asking why the Torah begin with the story of creation. It should have begun with the first mitzvah. Now it has to be read. Torah should have begun with the first mitzvah. Oyu ma'atam. What a wonderful reason there is that it began with the story of creation. And then Rashi goes on to tell us, great famous Rashi. Ma'atam posam l'vdeshes. Mishum koach masov higid la'amo. A pasuk in Tehillim, God wanted to show the strength of his deeds to his people, latet lehem nachlat goyim, to give them the inheritance of nations. God wants them to know that he created the world so that he can give them the inheritance, their inheritance, which as we will see is Eretz Yisrael. Shem yomru umos ha'olam Yisrael, if the nations of the world will say to Israel, list of our ten, your thieves, shekabashtem, that you conquered the lands of seven nations, your ganavim, you stole it from the Palestinians, the indigenous people who have been here since time immemorial. All right. So then our response is, listen, the whole world belongs to God. He's the balabuas. He is the rightful owner of everything. He created, he made it, it's his, and therefore he can choose to give it to whoever he wants. For a certain period of time he gave it to them, and then he took it from them and gave it to us. Great Rashi. So much has been said about this Rashi. But we can't let the focus shift from what we talk about. One of my great ideas, that didn't sound, that wasn't humble enough. One of the ideas that God certainly put into my mind was one that I write in the preface to that great all-time autobiography, Touching History. All right? If you haven't read it yet, this appears in the preface. In the preface, and I remember the day that this idea hit me. The scene is the children's barracks in Auschwitz. There are children who may have no more than a day or two to live, maybe hours. A melamed makes his way into the barracks and he says, Kindlach, let's learn Torah. And he begins to teach them, Bereshis bara Elokim, in the beginning God created heaven and earth. Then he says, Kindlach, lamalen de Rashi. And he teaches them the Rashi. That if the nations of the world are going to accuse you of being thieves that just stole the Eretz Yisrael, mm-hmm, then our response is, listen, the world belongs to God. He took it from them and he gave it to us. When the Rebbe is finished, a little emaciated hand is raised. The little boy asks the Rebbe, Rebbe, I don't understand, what world does Rashi live in? What's Rashi talking about? They're going to accuse us. We stole Eretz Yisrael. We don't own the clothes on our back. We don't know how many more hours we have to live. Israel is being exterminated. And Rashi begins by saying, if the nations of the world are going to accuse you of having stolen Eretz Yisrael, don't worry about it. God gave it to us. And the Rebbe, with tears coming down his cheek, says, Yigal, it's a good question you're asking, but you have to know that if this is what Rashi said, then we believe in Mirtz Hashem, someday it will be true. For close to 900 years, Jews opened up a Chumash and learned that first Rashi by taking a leap of faith. We are the generation that no longer has to take a leap of faith. I used to get upset when we would be condemned for stealing the land from the Palestinians. Not after this thought. Rashi was right. They're accusing us of theft. Rashi was right. Unfortunately, that Rebbe in Auschwitz did not know that 4 years later, what Rashi had written 900 years earlier was going to become reality. We are the generation that no longer needs to take a leap of faith in order to learn a Pasuk Chumash. For us, the reality dancing before our very eyes. My question is, and that's what the shiur is about, I want to ask another question. The flip side of Rashi's question. Rashi asked, why does Torah begin with the story of creation when Torah should have begun with the first law, the first of God's legislative commands to the Jewish people? HaKodesh HaZalachem. Okay, we made it. We're here now. We made it. I want to ask another question. Couldn't God, in his first communication, have come up with something more inspiring than HaKodesh HaZalachem? You know what HaKodesh HaZalachem is? How to make a calendar. That our calendar depends on the moon, which makes a revolution around the earth every 29 days, 12 hours, 793 halakim. Astronomical calculations, that's not a good word. Calculations of astronomy, math, physics, chedesh. It's not a simple thing to make a Jewish calendar. You know how much goes into making a decision that this year should be a leap year? Gemara's that talk about it. I would have expected that in the first communication of God to the Jewish people, he'd say something rousing like, freedom now! Am Yisrael Chai! Shema Yisrael! Yahavtu Le'acha Kolacha! Don't shoot till you see the whites in their eyes. Something inspiring, something moving, something powerful, but no. Something that seems to be so dry. Mathematical calculations on how to make a calendar. Now we're going to find out what's the essence of that first mitzvah of HaKodesh HaZelachem. So I'm going to bring the first thing. It's number three. Number three is a piece from the Rambam in the Sefer Mitzvot. There are really only two lines that the likes of which appear nowhere else in all of the massive writings of the Rambam. The Sefer Mitzvot, the Book of Commandments, is the introduction to his magnum opus, the Mishneh Torah, where he lists the 14 criteria that are necessary for something to be considered a mitzvah, and then he lists the mitzvah. All of them, the positive commandments and the negative commandments. Positive commandment 153 is the commandment of Kiddush HaChodesh, sanctifying the new moon, the mitzvah of HaChodesh HaZavakev. Leading up to this piece, the Rambam had said that anybody who truly understands knows that there's a great secret involved in this mitzvah, a secret which is a fundamental article of Jewish faith. And he describes it. And now he says, these are the awesome words of the Rambam. Hineni mosif l'cha biur. I'm going to add clarification. I'm going to explain the point that I'm making. Ilu hinachnu l'mashal. If we would assume, just for example, ilu hinachnu l'mashal, if we would assume, shebnei Eretz Yisrael ye'odru me'Eretz Yisrael, that the children of Israel are absent from Eretz Yisrael, there are no Jews in Eretz Yisrael. And here comes the only parenthetic comment in all of the works of the Rambam. Cholil olokel mi'azot zot. God forbid that it should ever happen, that there should be a total absence of Jews from Eretz Yisrael. Cholil olokel mi'azot zot. Lefi shekvar hiftiach. Because God promised us shelo yimoche. The nation will not be erased, the lo yisharesh nor uprooted, et shedit ha'um lagamri. The Jewish people will never be utterly destroyed. Wait a minute. You know what the Rambam is saying? That if there would be an absence, a total absence of Jews, there's no Jew in Eretz Yisrael. Klal Yisrael is finished. There are 50 million in America Shomrei Torah mitzvahs. Another 10 million in Canada. If it reaches a point where there isn't a single Jew left in Eretz Yisrael, the Rambam is saying that this is the absolute and total destruction of the Jewish people, and God promised he would never do that. Now the Rambam is doing the following. He has to set up, in order to explain what he has been saying, he has to set up a possibility. The possibility is, theoretically, if not a single Jew would be in Eretz Yisrael, the Rambam is going to go on to say, our calendars would be useless, there would be no Yom Tovim, there would be no Pesach, no Shavuos, no Sukkos. Why? Because the halacha is that our calendar, which was really set up in advance in the 3rd or 4th century by Hillel, a descendant of the original Hillel, that calendar only works. The technicality of the calendar is it only works as long as there is a Jew in Eretz Yisrael. It's all dependent on Eretz Yisrael. You don't have to understand why, but this is halacha. It can only be established by rabbis who received smicha in Eretz Yisrael. Without Eretz Yisrael, the calendar, which means forget it, the no Yom Tovim, we're finished, we can pack up. Klal Yisrael has come to an end. That's what the Rambam is saying. What happens if there's one Jew in Eretz Yisrael? Yossi Sarid. Shulamit Alondi. Okay. If there's one Jew in Eretz Yisrael, the calendar works, our Yom Tov in place, the Jewish people is alive. You understand the awesome chiddush of what the Rambam is saying? And the Rambam says, such is the halacha. Why? Ki mitzion teitze Torah udvar Hashem Yerushalayim. From Tzion goes forth Torah. The new moon has to be established in Eretz Yisrael. And from Eretz Yisrael, the word goes out to the rest of the world. But it is in Yerushalayim, at the Sanhedrin. And in ancient days, what happened was witnesses would come every month to the Sanhedrin and say that we saw the new moon. They would be cross-examined. Bezdin would ascertain, the Sanhedrin would ascertain that yes, they saw the new moon, and on that basis, Sanhedrin would say, this is Rosh Chodesh. And then the word went out to all of Israel throughout the world. And we're going to see right away how that was done. Many of the Achronim, what they write about this Rambam, the Rambam's hand and his pen began to shake. He trembled, just even raising the, for instance, the possibility that there would be a Jew left in Eretz Yisrael. He couldn't go further, he had to stop. And he writes, God forbid that this should happen. There is no such, so no comment of that sort any place in all of the Rambam. God forbid. Because the total absence of Jews from Eretz Yisrael, then it's all over. We have no Yom Tovim. If we don't have Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos, it's all over. That's the Rambam. And the Rambam expresses it in the most powerful way of all. So let's just read it again. Down at the bottom, I took that sentence and put it in larger letters. Hineni mosif l'chabir, I'm adding clarity, clarification. Ilu hinachnu l'mashal, if we would assume, for example, shebnei Eretz Yisrael, ye odru me'Eretz Yisrael, Jews are not in Eretz Yisrael, chalila l'keil, God forbid that he should do so. Which brings me to another question. And via that, we're going to make our way to the ultimate point of this year. Greece, the days before the Hasmonaim, the Greeks legislated and prohibited keeping Shabbos. They did not permit bris milah, circumcision. And they also abolished Rosh Chodesh. Now, I can understand why they didn't want bris milah. You know, Jews are not different. You're not different than anybody else. On the contrary, they want to turn them into Greeks, Panhellenists. Shabbos? Nah. What did they want from poor Rosh Chodesh? What did they want from Rosh Chodesh? Listen, when we remember to say Yom Aviyavu in benching on Rosh Chodesh, we pat ourselves on the back. I didn't forget it. Okay? And over here, the Greeks, you understand? No Rosh Chodesh. Why were they opposed to Rosh Chodesh? So number four, I give a number of reasons. A. Rosh Chodesh reminded Jews world over, month after month, the centrality of Eretz Yisrael. Because Rosh Chodesh could only be established in Eretz Yisrael, and Jews throughout the world had to wait for the word to come from Eretz Yisrael. Which means a number of things, as we'll see. It will mean that there's a constant bond between the Jews of Bava and the Jews of Eretz Yisrael. And more than that, we're going to see, you know what else it means? It means that once a month, all of Israel worldwide looks and waits and listens to hear the word that will emerge from the Gedolei Yisrael of the Sanhedrin. It means that there's a central authority about Klal Yisrael. Not everybody who puts on a shingle that he's a rabbi or a rabbah or a maharat or a who knows what don't work. Not everybody's a pesach. Not everybody's a sider. There's an authority. And the people who are the authority are the ones who are the repository of the Torah Sheba'al Peh, the oral law. Moshe kibal Torah b'Sinai, u'mesorah l'Yoshua, and it went down from generation to generation. Klal Yisrael is not hefker. Not everybody has an opinion that we have to listen to. There's a Torah authority. Finished. If Greece wanted to make any inroads into the Jewish consciousness, they had to remove the centrality of Eretz Yisrael because they wanted to be Greece. Not from Yerushalayim Teitzei Torah, but from Olympus Teitzei Avinuzoga. They have their authorities. They have to reject entirely the authorities of Torah. Which means already this Rosh Chodesh is becoming a little bit more significant. This Rosh Chodesh has already gone beyond being no more than just some kind of a boring calculation of 29 days, 12 hours, 793 halakim. It's become much, much more. It has become a fundamental principle that first of all holds together Jews for the whole world. And it tells them that we have an authority. All eyes turn to Eretz Yisrael. And in the focal point of world Jewry, wherever they may be, is Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh. Oh, these are powerful. These are very powerful. Let's turn. Number five. In number five, really, all I'm doing in number five, two, three Mishnayot in the Sefer Rosh Hashanah. The first one is the opening of the Sefer Rosh Hashanah. I'm going to read it now, but we're going to come back to it because that's going to be at the heart of the significance of this mitzvah. Arbor Rosh Hashanah, the Mishnah says there are four Rosh Hashanahs. Be'echad b'Nissan, Rosh Hashanah, l'nolochem v'lerikol. The first day of Nissan. Remember, this mitzvah, Chodesh Azalachem, Rishon hu lachem l'chodshei Hashanah, is talking about the month of Nissan. The month of Nissan is Rosh Hashanah for kings. And the Gemara says that if a king ascended the throne on the 29th day of Adar, the next day, Rosh Chodesh Nissan, is counted as day two of his reign. Of course, the year changes in Nissan. The Gemara also says, kings of the nations of the world, non-Jewish kings, we count their year from the first of Tishrei. Jewish kings, we count their year from the first day of Nissan. Non-Jewish kings from the first day in Tishrei. Which, of course, is going to bring us to the great question that should shake everybody up. I think we're the only people on the face of this earth that the year changes in Tishrei. And the first of months is Nissan. I mean, yeah, can you imagine? Can you imagine? The year changes January 1st, Happy New Year. Okay? New Year. The 1st of July. Oh! HaKodesh HaZeh Lachem Rosh Chodesh. What's going on over here? We're a smart people. What's the way you tell us over here? No other people has anything of the sort. Tuck that away for a few minutes. We'll get back. Then it goes on to say, Barishona. This is in the second perek of Rosh Hashanah. Barishona Hayu Masi and Masuot. during the period of the Second Temple, how did the Jews of Babel know it was Rosh Chodesh? So the Mishnah says they had a wonderful wedding. Torches. There would be torches. The moment that Sanhedrin would decide that it's Rosh Chodesh, there were people waiting on mountaintops across Mesopotamia all the way to Babel. Mm-hmm. They're waiting on the last day of the month. They're waiting. And the moment that they decided it in Sanhedrin, they'd light a torch, and the first one to see it would be the fellow on Har HaZeisim, and then it cuts across Eretz Yisrael into Eber HaYarden, all the way across to Babel. So at first, they didn't have torch. When the kusim went, they had people that were Jewish and not Jewish. Gemara ultimately passed and they were not Jewish. They ruined it. All you have to do is have somebody go there and set off the torches when it's not Rosh Chodesh. You confuse the whole world. So when they did it, so then from that time on, no more torches, but there were runners, riders, who went out from Sanhedrin. They were ready, you understand? The pony Rosh Chodesh Express, out they went into the world to notify Jews. And next Mishnah says, Keser Hayol Asiyah Masuas, how did they do it? Nevi'in Kun Soishol Eres, they brought torches of cedar wood, Arukim V'konim Atei Shemen, Ure'orez, Kurt V'shirza, you wrapped the shmat around it, you dipped it into oil, and you made yourself a torch. V'olol Rosh Ahor, you go up to the top of the mountain, U'matzit V'hen Et Ha'or, you light it, U'molech, U'mevi, U'mala, U'modin, this way, that way, up, down, this way, that way, up, down, until he sees the fellow on the next mountain, up, down, back, forth. And then it was so quick. So quick, everybody's waiting. And then the Mishnah says, Achshu roet chavero, shu osu ten berosh ha-rasheni, v'chein berosh ha-rasheshi, mountain to mountain. And then the next pasuk, in the next Mishnah, they mention the names of the mountains. Umi'anin hu yumasiyam asulas, and where did they do it? From Haramishcha, that's Harazazim, to Sartava, from Sartava, to Gripinya, Me Gripinya la Chavron, Chavron, they bought me, bought me, Zobjom. They bought me, was the last mountain, didn't move. He kept going up and down, the fellow all the way out there, hundreds of miles out, up and down, until he saw all of Babel before him going up in flames. Because they would be waiting in Babel, and people had went on their rooftops. Can you imagine? Every day, every month, the last day of the month, Jews in Babel would be on their rooftops, waiting to get the message from Yerushalayim. It must have been such a thrilling and exciting experience. Word is coming from Yerushalayim. Marshal, I gave for that. Some of you will still understand it. The new generation, we're so ancient, we're so archaic, we are so antiquated. I was living in West Hempstead. I think it was, in the middle 70s. I came home one morning from shul, and my wife, mitragashing, at the time, all excited. You just had a call from Yerushalayim. I said, what? You have a call from Yerushalayim. They didn't call back right away. The phone rang. I pushed out, I'm shaking. I pick up the phone. Yeah. It was Rabbi Rose of the Engizer, or Rose of Lashon, calling me from Yerushalayim. I was overwhelmed. And again, you go through this whole bit, like, why, you sound like you're next door. It's so clear. It's so, yeah. Today, who'll understand that? Yeah. Who'll understand? All these kids that come here for the year, yeah, any time of day or night they want to, they give a call from their cell phone home. Half the time the parents call and say, I can't talk to you now, I want friends. You understand? I was here a year and a half, I learned in Eretz Yisrael, I never called home. I never called home. If you have to make a phone call from here to the United States, you have to go and reserve a time at the Doar. But I never bothered doing that because we didn't have a phone at home. So who am I going to call? But here it is. Can you imagine? In Bavel, the word arrives in Bavel. Millions of Jews waited month by month to receive word from Yerushalayim. Do you know what this meant? This cemented for hundreds of years the bond between the Jews of Eretz Yisrael and the Jews of Bavel. It brought home to them every month the centrality of Eretz Yisrael. The focal point of Jewish life is Yerushalayim, and the authority is Sanhedrin. That Rosh Chodesh is becoming far, far more significant than we want. But now, we're coming to what I consider definitely the most significant part of Rosh Chodesh. And herein will lie the great message. Nisan is the first of months. Kings of Israel, their years are counted starting with Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Kings of the nations of the world, you count their years from Tishrei. What's the difference between Nisan and Tishrei? The difference between the two is all the difference in the world. Tishrei is the beginning of the agricultural year. The Shemitah begins on Rosh Chodesh Tishrei and ends on the last day of the month of El. Shemitah, Yovel, Truma, Maisa, you name it. All of those halachas of mitzvahs, atluyot, paharetz, everything depends on Rosh Chodesh Tishrei. The year from creation changes on Rosh Chodesh Tishrei. On Rosh Chodesh Tishrei, the first day of Rosh Hashanah, 5775 came to an end and 5776 began. It's the year of nature. Rosh Chodesh Nisan, completely different story. Rosh Chodesh Nisan begins a year that goes beyond time. Beyond the natural. Rosh Chodesh Nisan is the year of miracles. It's the year of the unusual, the exceptional. It's the beginning of the divine year. Oh, what a difference this is going to make. It's a difference day and night. What's really happening over here is the following. Listen very carefully. There is a world of difference between world history and Jewish history. That's the main point we want to make. The difference between the two is the following. World history works on the basis of cause and effect. A leads to B to C. 1 to 2 to 3. I always like to say, I remember in high school in Torvadas, so we were learning about the French Revolution, and our teacher, he had a whole bunch of cards, and we had to learn all the causes of the French Revolution. And then, of course, we had to learn all the causes of the First World War and the Second World War. Everything works by cause and effect. A leads to B to C. That's the way of the world. You plow, you plant, you water, harvest. Natural year. One people on the face of this earth has a history which is completely different. It's not cause and effect at all. It's something radically and dramatically different. God tells Moshe Rabbeinu at the snare, when you leave Egypt, you will receive Torah on this mountain. Wait a minute. What does that have to do with anything? Well, that's going to be 3 months off. And God says, this is the sign that I've sent you. Let me ask you. Why did Jews come to Sinai? Why did they receive Torah at Sinai? Is it because they left Egypt? They came to Sinai? Or because God wanted to bring them to Sinai, he took them out of Egypt? Makes all the difference in the world. The first possibility is he took them out of Egypt. What are you going to do with 3 million people now? Oh! We're going to take them to Sinai, and we're going to give them Torah. Or no, the other possibility. It's all planned. It's all part of God's evolving plan for the world. Jews have to receive Torah at Sinai, so they have to come out of Egypt, from Egypt. Now watch what a difference this means. That means the latter event determines the earlier event. What's going to happen tomorrow determines today. That happens by no people on the face of this earth. What happens tomorrow is the result of today. What? You're going to get me. By the time I'm finished with you, you're going to get me. Jewish history is goal-oriented. We know the end of the story. We know the end of the story for 3,500 years. We know exactly how it's going to end. We don't know when it's going to end. But we know it's going to end with V'hoy Hashem L'melech al kol ha'aretz, God will be king over the whole earth. We know exactly where it's going. We know exactly what's going to happen. You know what it means? That the Jewish people are born into a different kind of history. Therein lies the eternity of the Jewish people. The Rebbeinu said there's going to be a Jewish people. They have eternity by virtue of the fact that they are given Torah. It makes no difference what the Goyim are going to do, think, or say. Mivel ze ivel leven. That's a basic part of Jewish belief. You know where it begins? It begins with Chodesh Nisan. Your history is different. Your history is not the cause of cause and effect. If our history would be cause and effect, we would have disappeared from the face of the earth 3,000 years ago, just like every other major civilization. But we're not like that. Our history is different. Our history has been determined long time ago by the Rabbeinu Shlomo. Now watch. Number 6. Now, number 6 is the Gemara of Sukkot. I'll tell you the background to the Gemara. The Gemara asks a question. The beginning of Sefer Bamidbar begins in the second year in the desert, the second month, the month of Iyar. Parsha Bamidbar, Naso, Bahalotcha, in the middle of Bahalotcha, all of a sudden they're told to bring the Korban Pesach in the first month of the second year. So the Gemara, why wasn't it written in chronological order? The second paragraph there. Omer of Menashe bar Tachlif. No. The first. The Nichto Bereshit of the Chodesh Nisan. Let the Torah write the incident of the first month first. In other words, in Bahaloscha, where they are told to bring the Korban Pesach, which is in the month of Nisan, that should be written first. And afterwards they should write the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar, which is in the second month. Why is it out of order? Omar Menashe bar Tachlif Mishmei de Rav. Rav Menashe bar Tachlif said in the name of Rav, I these words, that's all I need. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 words. Zodo Meret. This tells us that Torah is not written in chronological order. Ein mukdam u'mucha b'Torah. Rashi brings that number of times in Chumash. Torah is not written in chronological order. Yeah? Torah is not written in chronological order? It begins with creation. First man, 10 generations from Adam until Noach, 10 generations from Noach to Avram, Avram, Yitzhak, Yaakov, Yosef, Moshe, Aaron, 40 years in the desert. What are you talking about? It's not in chronological order? What are you talking about? What? All of Torah is in chronological order. It's in chronological order. We have one example here where it's not in chronological order. So how can you make a statement saying, so come in it? This comes to tell us that Torah is not in chronological order. It's not so. Torah is in chronological order. What does the Gemara mean? So I'll tell you, the Gemara here is telling us something far more profound. The Gemara is telling us that the history of all people follow Mugdon and Mu'ochar, the former, the latter. Chronological order, A, B, C, D, 1, 2, 3, 4. Jewish history doesn't work that way. It's not the former that dictates the latter. It's the latter that dictates what's going to happen before. Torah at Sinai is why Jews go out of Egypt. It means all the difference in the world. You know what it means? The Jews are not bound by time. HaChodesh HaZeh Lochem. Gemara says, this month is unto you. Time is in your hands. It's yours. If we are bound by time, if we are chronological, then we should have disappeared just like all other people disappeared. But we didn't disappear because we are beyond time. In space. HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem is the mitzvah that establishes the principle that Jewish history is so, so much different than the history of any other people. And once I'm going to show you what I consider, what an example. Number 7. In the Megillah it says, Achar HaDvarim HaElah. Achar HaDvarim HaElah, the first pasuk of the third chapter of the Megillah. The second chapter had ended with an attempt on the life of the Achashverosh that had been discovered by Mordechai, and Bibsam and Seresh are hung, and they write into the chronicles of the king that Mordechai saved the king. Achar HaDvarim HaElah, the next pasuk, beginning of the third period. Achar HaDvarim HaElah, after these things, Gidal HaMelech Achashverosh raised Haman to power. Now when you say Achar HaDvarim HaElah, it seems like there's a connection between the two. What's the connection between the two? So the Gemara says, Omar Rava, Achar HaDvarim HaElah. Achar Bai, the Gemara asks. After what? Amar Rava. Amar Rava. Archa Shebara HaKadosh Baruch Hu Refua L'Marva. After God had already prepared the Refua, then God brings the Marva. In other words, everything that is necessary in order to save the Jewish people already in place. Esther is the queen. Mordechai has saved the king from an assassination plot. It's been written. These two factors are going to ultimately later bring the salvation of the Jewish people. God never strikes the Jewish people until everything is in place for their salvation. You know what that says? You know what that says? Jewish history is not determined by former and latter. Esther becomes queen, not because she has to be queen now. Esther becomes queen because we're going to need a queen later. Mordechai saves Achashverosh. Unfortunately, saves Achashverosh. Only because we're going to need that later. Everything is determined by the latter, not by the former. Jewish history doesn't work chronologically. The Gemara there goes on to say, and I should have put that in over here, like, the cup doesn't work all the time. The next piece of Gemara is, but by the nations of the world, God strikes them, and then he heals them. He strikes and he heals. Chronologically, one and then the other, not so by Klal Yisrael. Then down at the bottom, number 8. And in that same Gemara later on, it says that Haman drew lots. He built pure, poor Huagoro. He drew lots. Tono, we learned, given Shonafala, poor Bechodesh Odar, Sama, Simcha Gedola. When it came out that the month that he's going to destroy the Jewish people was Adar, he was very, very happy. Haman was chuckling away. He was very happy. Why? Because he said, Oma, not only poor, b'yerach shemeit b'Moshe. It's fallen in the month that Moshe died. That's a very auspicious time for the Jewish people to be utterly destroyed. The next sentence is such an awesome sentence. I think I learned it for 20 years until it struck me between the eyes. V'lo haya yodea, but he didn't know, she b'shiva ba'odah meis, u b'shiva ba'odah nolad. But what he didn't know is that Moshe was born on the, it was, Moshe died on the 7th of Adar and was born on the 7th of Adar. What an amazing sentence. What an amazing sentence. Is it a correct sentence?
Of course.
The Gemara should have said he didn't know that Moshe was born on the 7th and died on the 7th. That's not what he didn't know. He knew that Moshe, just like... How did Achashverosh know that Moshe died in the month of Adar? Again, a Talmud Chochem. It wasn't a Talmud Chochem. They obviously had his Dennis Ross, or his Martin Indyk, his advisor. Hey, your Excellency, oh, what luck! That's the month that Moshe Rabbeinu died. If he knew that Moshe Rabbeinu died in Adar, he could just as well have known that Moshe Rabbeinu was born in Adar. And you know what I say? Haman knew that he was born in Adar and that he died in Adar. But you know what he didn't know? He didn't know that Moshe is eternal. He didn't know that on the 7th of Adar, Moshe died. And from that moment on and further, he was born for eternity. Lo haya yodea shebeshiva ba'adar make Moshe. He's reborn again for all time. There's no death by Moshe Rabbeinu. Just like there's no death by Klal Yisrael. He didn't get it. You know what he didn't get? He didn't get that Jewish history is different. You want to destroy them? Can't be. They're God's people. They're an eternal people. It won't happen. Their history is not chronological. Their history is goal-oriented. I always like to use the Marshall, one of the great historians of the press of the last century was Sir Arnold Toynbee. 14 volumes, the history of the world. And so one of the ugly things that he said, and I take it personally, because I live in Harnoff, and Harnoff was on the, is partially built on the site of Deir Yassin, and Deir Yassin is where there was supposed to have been a terrible massacre of Arabs over there. The whole thing, Sheikh and Gomer, okay, has nothing to do with it. So he came up with an equation that what Hitler was to the Jews became to the Arabs. He was the first. Now it's being said all the time. There's genocide going on over here. Arab children are being poisoned. Arabs are being shot in the streets. So I was then living in Canada, and the ambassador, Israel's ambassador to Canada, was a 39-year-old by the name of Yaakov Herzog. He was the son of the chief rabbi. Toynbee was already in his early 70s, white hair. Herzog was a magical. Anyway, he challenged. Toynbee had come to lecture at McGill University in Montreal. Herzog challenged him to open the debate. He accepted it. 2 days later, the debate takes place. If you want to, it's a fascinating study. If you just Google Herzog Toynbee, they'll give you the whole debate. So I listened. The part of the debate I've listened to a number of times already. So you can see about a third of the way through already, Toynbee is he's stammering and stuttering. This 39-year-old Herzog can wipe the floor. Jerusalem shtike, they are heading. But I remember the first thing that he said, because Toynbee had also said that we stole the land. Rashi, we stole the land. We took it from the Palestinians. Floyd, I see the Rashi there. The opening remarks of Herzog on that issue were, there's been uninterrupted Jewish settlement in the land of Israel. No interruption. Always was a Jewish community. The Rambam. Ilu hinachnu derech mosol. Would we chas v'chalila say that there isn't a single Jew left in Eretz Yisrael? Cholila l'kel. It can't be. It can't be. So he wiped the floor. He wiped the floor with Toynbee. But I know Toynbee had a problem. Toynbee's problem was really Homo's problem, Hitler's problem. Toynbee is the one who traced the rise and fall of 21 civilizations. 21 civilizations. He found them, I don't know, he discovered them, he made them up, nobody knew the difference. Anyway, he showed that there was a pattern, and the pattern was clear. Each one of the 21 civilizations, going back to Chves, ancient Egypt, Akkadia, Chves, there was always the period of infancy, the struggle to rise to power, finally achieving greatness, conquering, and then inexorably, each one of these 21 civilizations, when they achieved the peak, you know what began? The decline, weakness from within, suffering, struggle, corruption, the decline, ultimately decay, deterioration, collapse, disappearance, gone. So, in his work on history, he had one problem, like the whole world has. There's one problem with the Jews. According to how he has established the pattern of 21 civilizations, they all have to follow the same pattern, but there are Jews around. They didn't follow the pattern. So now, he could have been honest and said, listen, I don't understand. Maybe the Jews are an exception to the rule. But no, he couldn't say that. So he came up with his Goyish Pshat, that the Jews that you see are really what every civilization does. They leave fossils. They leave shards. They leave earthenware. You know, a simon that is still... So the Jews that you see are the fossils. Then he was hit over the head on the 5th of Iyar, 1948, the fossil established a state. There is no evidence of anything of the sort in all of history. Fossils don't create states. Fossils just keep fossiling along until they disappear. So he was beside himself. So what he did is what some of the Israelis done throughout history. He said, this is a people, these are killers. Tir Yassin, he wiped the floor with the Jewish people. Because he didn't know, just like Haman didn't know. Fossils don't create states, but a divine people returns to life. Because the divine people are the dry bones that Yechezkel saw. Because Jewish history is not chronological. It doesn't go A, B, C. It's not cause and effect. We've accomplished two things today. Number one, the mitzvah of HaChodesh Hazeh Lochem is the most awesome halachic statement of the eternity of the Jewish people. Your history is different because this Nisan that comes in the middle of the year is the first of months, because there are months and years that begin because there are the natural months, but you are a supernatural people. You are beyond time. You are not bound by time. But then it struck me as I'm walking around the house. You know what it means? I never saw anybody that said this, so just get yourself ready. Get yourself ready. You know what it means? Let's go back to that first Rashi. Lo hayah tzarech lahaskil es haTorah. Torah should have gone not with creation, but should have begun with HaChodesh Hazeh Lochem, the first mitzvah. Matam, why the Torah begin with Bereshis Bara? You know what emerges? The two, the story of Bereshis and the first mitzvah, are inextricably intertwined. One leads to the next. Bereshis tells us that God gave us Eretz Yisrael. HaChodesh Hazeh Lochem tells us that Jews will always live in Eretz Yisrael, uninterrupted. These two statements, all of Sefer Bereshis and HaChodesh Hazeh Lochem, are not divorced from one another. One inextricably leads to the next. They're cut from the same cloth. Bereshis tells us the earth was created by God, it belongs to Him, and He gave us Eretz Yisrael, and it's ours. And HaChodesh Hazeh Lochem tells Yaakov Herzog that he can tell Toynbee there's been uninterrupted settlement of Eretz Yisrael throughout history. Cholil olakel, that there should be a period, a moment in history without a Jew in Eretz Yisrael. And it never happened. Never happened. In know? I wipe myself out. That's
the shit. We're wiped out.
Yeah.